I was a little concerned. I was trying to recount my mind how many went to the camp out and how many might have heard a portion of this lesson. And I think when I look out, there's maybe only a few of you. For those who get to go to the camp out, it's a great blessing. And if you don't get to go, I thought it might be good to recount some of the things that hit home to me. At the camp out, if you've never been, or if it's been a while since you've been, they have a devotional just before the main lessons. And for anybody that was there this year, and I try to take notes because my memory's not very good, but we had five incredible devotionals, and some of them that I thought really resonated, and one of them that I took relatively good notes on. And it's supposed to be about a 5 to 8 minute devotional. Sometimes they get a little longer, but that's okay. Was about geese. And I really thought this one hit home. I really hadn't thought through the fact of how it would, I would say dovetail, but I think somebody even said in the camp, what did he say, goose tail? I think it was John that said that, with Eric's lesson. We're in 1 Peter. If you're not upstairs, you're missing a good lesson, but it's about, we've been talking about encouragement. And so that's this morning what I want to talk about. And you'll hear, for those of you who are there, you'll hear some of the similar things that were brought out in that devotional. Drew Hartman gave a really good one about rattlesnakes, and I intend one day to try to talk about that as well. But I think in the scriptures, there is often times where nature is pointed to or an illustration is made through nature. And we could probably spend a lot of time looking at this, but Solomon directed the sluggard, if you remember, to consider the ant. In Proverbs chapter 6, verses 6 through 11, it says, "Go to the ant, you slugger, consider her ways, and be wise, which having no captain, overseer, or ruler, provides her supplies in the summer, and gathers her food in the harvest. How long will you slumber, O sluggard? When will you rise from your sleep? A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to sleep. So shall your poverty come on you like a prowler, and your need like an armed man." Just one example. Jesus looked at the birds and talked about considering the lilies. In Matthew chapter 6, verses 26 through 28. "Look at the birds of the air, for they neither sow nor they reap nor they gather into barns, yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Are you not of more value than they? Which of you by worrying can add one cubit to his stature? So why do you worry about clothing? Consider the lilies of the field, how they grow. They neither toil nor spin." We could spend, I think, the whole morning looking at some of these great examples. And so one of the lessons that was brought out was about the geese and animals that God had created and some things that were instilled in them, some things that were innate in them. And based on some of those comments, I wanted to give a lesson. So let's consider the lesson from the geese. This morning what I wanted to look at, I wanted to consider the scientific fact, and then I wanted to see if we could learn from that, what lessons we can learn from it. Geese practice synergy. Scientific fact, as each goose flaps its wings, it creates uplift for the other geese, or the geese that follow. By flying in a V formation, the whole flock, and it was commented then, and you can go read about this, 71% greater flying range. So there's a 71% efficiency gain, if you will, from the way they fly. Then, versus if they just tried to fly alone. So if a single goose just tried to get up and fly, wouldn't work as well. The lesson is, for us, people who share, or Christians who share a common direction or a common bond, get to where they want to go quicker, and I'm going to say even easier, because they're traveling with a group of people they can trust and that they work together with. What a lesson for us as Christians. This is a principle of synergy. Two or more working together to produce a same result. Well, what's the Bible tell us about two or more? Some of you have already went there in your mind. This explains the biblical practice that we see, the two by two. Mark chapter 6, verse 7. And he called the 12 to himself and began to send them out two by two and gave them power over unclean spirits. Luke chapter 10, verse 1. After these things, the Lord appointed 70 others also and sent them two by two before his face into every city and place where he himself was going to go. In Acts chapter 13, verse 2, as they ministered to the Lord and fasted with the Holy Spirit, now separate to me Barnabas and Saul for the work which I have called them. We see this example. We see where there were two sent out. We see where there's synergy. We see where working together is a good thing. Ecclesiastes chapter 4, verses 9 and 10. Two are better than one, because they have a good reward for their labor. For they fall, one will lift up his companion. But woe to him who is alone when he falls, for he has no one to help him up. Again, if two lie together, they will keep warm. But how can one be warm alone? Though the one may be overpowered by another, two can withstand him. And a threefold cord is not quickly broken. We see we're working together and using, we're using the word synergy, is a good thing. The geese use it, and we can too. We know that we benefit from mutual edification. A fact is that when a goose, and if you didn't know this, I had to read about it, but when a goose falls out of formation, it suddenly feels this strong drag. It's like it's singly, it's on its own trying to single-handedly fly, and it incurs a ton of resistance that it didn't get before when it was in that formation, and the flapping of the wings would lift the others. It quickly, if it's not hurt, it quickly moves back into formation to take advantage of that lifting power, to get back into that V formation, and so that it can immediately benefit from the others. Lesson for us. Much like the goose, we realize the benefits of staying in formation with those who are headed in the same place we are. We need to be willing to accept others' help and give others help when they are in need. You know, it's the comment's been made, it's very, very difficult to help a person that just doesn't want help. You ever tried that? You ever offered your help and they just kind of reject it? And you offer it again maybe and they reject it? Well, you kind of quit offering. We need to be willing to accept help. We need to also be willing to ask for help. And we just have to realize that it's beneficial to both, the one who's wanting to help and to you. Christians appreciate the value of mutual edification. I just have this as a side note, but I think it's important. The benefits of all of us edifying one another. Hebrews chapter 3, verses 12 through 14 says, "Beware, brethren, lest there be any of you an evil heart of unbelief in departing from the living God. But exhort one another daily, while it is called today, lest any of you be hardened through the deceitfulness of sin. For we have become partakers of Christ if we hold the beginning of our confidence steadfast till the end." Staying in Hebrews chapter 10, verses 24 and 25, says, "And let us consider one another in order to stir up love and good works, not forsaking the assembly of ourselves together as the manner of some, but exhort one another, and so much more as you see the day approaching." So what can we do as Christians? Well, this mutual edification is mutually beneficial to all of us. You know, imagine, and we'll get into this a little bit later, but imagine just a few doing the work. Imagine the benefit that we get. You know, it doesn't take long as you're sitting at the camp out and you get diverse comments. You get diverse teaching. You get, it's wonderful. How much do you value your brothers and sisters and everyone's differing abilities? Have you ever thought about that for a second? Isn't it nice that God has blessed some of us with differing abilities? Now, it doesn't mean we can't hone our skills and that we can't assist and that we can't also get good in that skill. But aren't you glad that there are some who have abilities and characteristics that you don't have? So my encouragement is not to take for granted each other's abilities. And whether that's in your mind or in their mind, something small or something big. The ability to teach, the ability to clean, the ability to encourage, the ability to welcome. There's all those different things. But what it takes to have a family and what it takes for that family to work together. You know, I didn't know this, but there is a different word for a group of geese that are in the air versus a group of geese on the ground. Maybe you knew this. But when the geese are in flight, they are called a skein. When they're on the ground, they're called a google, or a gaggle. And I didn't know that. A group of Christians we would call the church. And I was thinking about this, thinking about how the church and the physical work and the physical makeup of the church. Geese share burdens. They share the burden of getting to where they need to go. The fact is, when the lead goose tires, and you've seen this, if you've ever looked up and you've seen these geese flying in this formation, you'll see that lead goose rotate back in later on in that formation. They'll get back towards the group, the very end. And you'll see that rotation occur. Similar to if you've ever watched a bicycle race or you've watched the Olympics where they have that lead bicycle person and they have a team, they work as a team, and there's a lead bicyclist, or they call that the pace lining, and they'll fall back and they will lead for a while, but then they'll get towards the back and let someone else lead. There's a lesson here for us, and I think there's many lessons, but one of the benefits, there are benefits to taking turns. And, you know, I was thinking about this in the church. What if one person, and this doesn't always get to happen. You know, I think about small congregations. I think about Somerville. I was thinking about, and I don't know exactly how long, but I know that as long as I went there when I was a little kid, we'd go visit. My grandmother was the teacher. She was, I think, the sole teacher in the front room that they have up there. And she taught every group from that was, whether they were 2 years old all the way up to high school. It was just a one, you might think of it as a one classroom group. But she taught for years. And I don't know, you know, you'd love to know how long that occurred, but forever. And Judy and I were talking about that the other day, about how she had taught even Jason and Jody and, you know, and then many, many kids before that. But that's difficult to do. And when you have the ability or the perk of not having to do that, it's nice. It's nice to be able to take turns. It's nice to, maybe in that local little congregation, they didn't have that ability. But imagine if that happened in our group, where the same three people went downstairs and taught the little kids for years. Well, not only is it nice to be able to have that break and be able to come up and maybe learn in the adult class, but look at the ability that you give someone else to step in that role. And look at the opportunity that you give someone else to hone their skills in teaching the kids. And if you've, most of us in this audience have prepped for a class, it puts you in a much better spot than if you've never prepped for a class. Look at the benefits that you gain. I guarantee you, I know Eric's lesson is good for those of us upstairs right now, but what is he gaining from that lesson? A lot. And for those of us who have prepped for 6 weeks or 8 weeks, whatever, you come away from that in a much better spot. But there are benefits in sharing the burden. You know, if the same person prepared, and I know in the Somerville scenario this happened, but imagine if you were the only person that ever prepared the Lord's Supper. Seems like a fairly simple thing, but imagine if no one else knew how to get the bread ready or to bake that, or what to do when it came time to preparing the Lord's Supper. It's good to share in the burden. It's good for us to take turns. It keeps us sharp. It keeps us just like the lead goose. There is a time of tiring, and there's a time to rotate to the back. You'll be up front again, just like that lead goose who's going to take his turn. But there are benefits to sharing with different tasks and teaching the younger and how to do that. As with geese, people are very interdependent on each other. We are interdependent on the various skills that we have and the capabilities and the unique talents that God has blessed us with. And thank goodness we have those. As members of the body of Christ, we are to do our part. Ephesians chapter 4, verse 16 says, "From whom the body, joined and knit together by what every joint supplies, according to the effective working by which every part does its share, causes growth of the body for the edifying of itself in love. So why is it that we have all these differing gifts? Why is it that we work together? It's so there is growth. The body will not grow if you don't have that. So there's a major benefit in sharing in that and taking your turn in rotation and not just always doing something. Geese encourage those who lead. I had never thought of this. Those of you who are at the camp out, maybe you knew this. But when he brought this up, I had no clue why geese honk. I never really thought about it. But there's a reason. They don't just do it just for fun. But geese flying in a formation honk to encourage those up front. To keep up your speed. Keep going. Their honk isn't a complaint. This was pointed out. But their honk is not a complaint, rather a sound of encouragement. I thought that was a great point. It's a scientific fact. It's not just something we want to apply. But some have said that when they're on the ground, and so maybe you've seen a group of geese on the ground, and they're all just honking. It was made comment, and you can read about it. They're encouraging one another to, let's take flight. They're encouraging one another to do something, to take action. They're encouraging each other. Well, isn't the lesson for us that we need to make sure that our honk is encouraging? I thought that was a great point made. Are you encouraging your brothers and sisters with your honk? Or are you complaining? Or are you tearing down? Or are you just aimlessly honking? Hopefully your honk is a honk of encouragement. And that comes in many forms and fashions. Sometimes that honk needs to be a little bit of prodding. Sometimes that honk is just complete compassion and love and care. In groups where there is encouragement, the production is absolutely higher. And I'll just ask, and it's rhetorical. But think of a time when you worked, I don't care what that job was. So go back in your construction days, your teaching days, I don't know, whatever it is for you. Did you have someone that honked and it was destructive and that's all they did? They tore down, they belittled, they caused problems, but they didn't have honking of encouragement. What was the production like? I've been a part of that group. It's down. Your morale's down, your production's down, and either you probably left that environment or you watched as people left that environment. No one really enjoys that environment. And so our encouragement here in this area is that, you know, we have many of people that can be encouraged. You don't have to be an elder or a deacon to need or receive encouragement. You can be a member that absolutely needs encouragement. But your leaders for sure can benefit from encouragement. Sometimes we think, and I'll ask you to think about this. When you worked under a boss or you worked under a VP or an owner, did you think about encouraging them? Sometimes we think, oh, they don't need that. I mean, they're the owner. They don't need encouragement. Oh, they're the senior vice president. Why would I need to encourage them? Well, I'm going to tell you, they do need encouragement. And no different than our elders or deacons would need your encouragement. Maybe we have a teacher that needs your encouragement. Maybe you see your little ones go downstairs and you know that's going to be tough. You deal with them daily. You know that age is tough. Are you encouraging your teacher? I got a thank you note one time from someone in this congregation about teaching their kids. And I thought, ooh, that felt good. It was a little encouragement. It was so simple. It was basic, but there was encouragement there. And I like that. The power of encouragement. Think about a time when you needed encouragement. I hope someone picked up on that. You know, there were various comments made, but one comment made in the class was about a husband and wife and a team. There are things that Dwayne will never see that Theta will see, and she can point that out and remind him or help him. There are things that Amy's going to pick up on or have a conversation with somebody I'll never know about, but she can tell me about it. And you think about how that team can work together and we can encourage one another. There are conversations that Mike and I and Jay may know about, you may never know about as deacons. We can encourage each other. So think about those who can receive encouragement. Think about your honking. Is it pointed? Is it proper? Is the timing good? And is it in a positive direction? or is it just a noise? You know, that honk is kind of weird. We were down at the landing just a couple of days ago, and we heard that honking, honk, honk. And it's, you know, it's kind of neat, but over time it's like, ooh, that's kind of annoying. Well, what is it, spirited? Is it in the right direction? Is it pointed? Or is it just an annoying honk? And according to what you read about geese, it's usually pointed. There's a reason for it. It's encouragement. So make sure if you're honking in a positive way. Ephesians 4:29 says, "Let no corrupt words proceed out of your mouth, but what is good for necessary edification, that it may impart grace to the hearers." Is your encouragement imparting grace to whoever hears that? Think about who hears the things that you say. It might be your kids. It might be your neighbors. It might be your coworkers. It might just be this congregation. But is it edifying? Are the words that come out of your mouth, are they edifying or not really? It's just that simple. We have a choice. The words should be and can be edifying. And it should impact others. Or the things that we say that we impart to others should be edifying. That honk should be important. It should be pointed. It should be pointed in a positive direction. Colossians 4:6 says, "Let your speech always be with grace." Is your speech always with grace? "Let your speech always be with grace, seasoned with" what? Salt. If you've had something that's not been seasoned at all, it's usually kind of nasty. But season it just a little bit with salt, and oh, it makes it so much better. Why do we do these things? Why do we speak it with grace and season with salt? So that you may know how you ought to answer each one. There are benefits to saying the right thing, seasoned perfectly, at the right time. Some of you have maybe had an arm put around you at just the right time. Maybe you received a card or a little sticky note at just the right time. What'd that mean to you? Maybe you felt like, man, I just don't want to do this anymore. I don't know if I can go on. I don't really want to be a part of this anymore. And just at the moment when you were either thinking about bailing, or you were discouraged, or you didn't like what was going on, someone, and it might have been the most unsuspecting person, gave you just that little nudge of encouragement you needed. I don't want to get too sidetracked on this, but all of us have various ways of encouraging. I wish Mark was here today. We've all been encouraged by Mark in only ways that Mark can do it. It wouldn't work for most of us to encourage the way Mark encourages, but it does for him. And you know it's out of love, even though you think, did he just slam me? Was that backhanded? And it probably was. But it was maybe just the encouragement in a light-humored way that you needed. And I'm not saying that's the only way he knows how to do it, but that's one of his ways. We all encourage in different ways, and isn't that a nice blessing that we all can receive it in just a slightly different way? How encouraging are you being? How seasoned with salt are your words? How graceful are the words that come out of your mouth? I was thinking about, you've probably seen that bumper sticker, "Honk if you love Jesus." And I was thinking, it's kind of funny, but I was thinking, we can now give a whole new meaning to "honk if you love Jesus." How are you honking? Not your horn on your car, but how good are you at honking? How good are you because you love Jesus at encouraging the faces that you can see here? And you know, there's a lot of negative things that can be said about Facebook, but are you encouraging to your brothers and sisters, whether privately or in a Facebook setting? Or there's a member here that may surprise you that's very good at handwriting notes of encouragement. And if you've not gotten one from him, I can promise you firsthand, when you get them, it's nice. And it's a benefit to get that, because you know it's out of love. So be one of those people that is honking because you love Jesus. Geese care for one another. A fact: when a goose gets sick or wounded or shot down or just can't press on, it doesn't go down by itself, but two geese go down with it. That's a scientific fact. They drop out of the formation, to help the goose that's going down. They stay with it until that goose either dies or gets well enough that they can rejoin another V. And then they'll launch up together to rejoin maybe a different, well, it will be different because the V is probably well on, that group that was already traveled on. So they'll join another flock, but two will go down to help them. What kind of lesson can we learn from that? It should be natural for us as we look out in this group, this family, it should be natural for us to stand by one another. And I think it is. It shouldn't be difficult to want to be with our family, our church family, when one is sick, or when one is not doing well, or when one is just needing uplifting. There are many, many benefits to working together. Christ saw it way early on when he sent two and two out, two by two out. Ecclesiastes 4 and 10, "For if they fall, one will lift up his companion. But woe to him who is alone when he falls, for he has no one to help him up." All of us this morning can think about coworkers who has had something bad happen in their life, and it completely spirals them out of control. They completely fall by the wayside. They completely just destruct. And you know, that shouldn't come too much as a surprise to us. It's sad to watch happen, but guess what? If we didn't have each other, how hard would things be sometimes? Crazy difficult. But isn't it nice to have your church family? And when I say our church family, it's bigger than just this local congregation. There are people that you have met at the camp out that you are now friends with and have maybe been friends with for 30 years, 20 years. Well, camp out's been going on 30 years. 30 years. That happens. 35. There are people that you met at a two-week Bible study many, many states away that you're now friends with that can encourage you and be friends with you. When one of us fall or one of them fall, who is there to pick them up? Galatians chapter 6, verses 1 and 2. "Brethren, if a man is overtaken in any trespasses, you who are spiritual, restore such a one in a spirit of gentleness, considering yourself lest you also be tempted. Bear one another's burdens and so fulfill the law of Christ." What a great verse. What a great thing for us to think about. Anyone here not been overtaken in a trespass? Or spiritually had a tough time? Spirit of gentleness. Were you there to swoop in with a spirit of gentleness to help that brother or sister out? I hope so. We can bear one another's burdens. We can be there for them. So I know it's a pretty simple lesson. It's not complicated. It's not tough to get your head wrapped around, but what a great reminder. My conclusion is that everyone can benefit from encouragement. Everyone. We've been studying in 1 Peter, I've mentioned this, but Peter encouraged those pilgrims who were suffering. That's what he was doing. That's what that whole first chapter is about, and more. We have examples in the Bible where prophets, servants, kings, heathens, apostles, all needed encouragement. No one is exempt from needing encouragement. I mentioned your boss, maybe your boss's boss, the owner. Do you think they're void of needing encouragement? They're not. Maybe the biggest, toughest person that we have in the congregation, whoever that may be, or maybe they have what looks to be a tough exterior, I promise you, they can benefit from encouragement. It needs to come at the right time, with the right spirit of gentleness, with the seasoned words. In 1 Thessalonians, we see different types of encouragement. Jacob read to us today about encouragement there in the chapter. In chapters 4 and 5, we are given the words to use to encourage, how to build one another up, how to encourage the faint-hearted, or help those who are weak. You can read about it. 1 Thessalonians, short book. Go read about it. It's chock full of great ways to encourage or those who need it. This morning, I'm hopeful that the things that I've said have been encouraging to you and reminded you how important encouraging one another is. And that if we're going to honk, we're going to encourage that it needs to be guided in a positive direction and not just a meaningless sound. So this morning we invite you, if you have a need or you are in need of encouragement or you realize that it is time to be baptized into Him, we encourage you to come forward as we stand and sing. 912.